Good morning, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving. Hey, how about that? When we left off with Moses last Sunday, he was deep in a conversation with God. And God was calling him to deliver the Hebrew people from Egyptian slavery. But Moses is resisting. And at this point, Moses has played every card that he has. Moses has admitted his weaknesses. He's expressed every possible doubt he could have. He's tried to weasel his way out of God's plan. And at the heart of the issue for Moses seems to be this. He simply does not trust God. He knows the plan, but he doesn't trust it. It doesn't make sense to Moses of who he is. It's a trust issue for Moses. And you know, I think that's always our issue with God, ultimately, when we boil it down, is trust. When you boil down many people's doubts about faith, it comes down to trust issues. For many of us, when we read or encounter the God of Scripture, we're not quite sure we can trust that God. One of the things I've come to realize about myself is I have some serious, real trust issues in life. Like I struggle to trust other people, their intentions, their motivations, their words. And I can't tell you exactly what that stems from. I think part of it stems from I don't exactly trust myself all the time. But trust is a real struggle for me, and it's a real struggle in my marriage as well. Now, I should explain, it's not that I don't trust Kristen wholeheartedly with the big things of life. I trust her wholeheartedly that way. It's the littler things that I'm concerned about and have issues of trust with. Things like aesthetics. For instance, Kristen and I will often, you know, when we're out and about, we'll visit people's homes, and she'll say things like, that was a really warm room, wasn't it? I was like, well, it felt comfortable to me. I don't know if it was warm. She's like, no, you don't get it. Like a room feels warm and inviting, and I just totally don't get that idea. But she's been talking lately about making our house warmer, whatever that means. And you have to understand my excitement one day. I came home, and there was a box from Amazon. And I wasn't expecting a box from Amazon. It was addressed to me. So I opened it up, and this is what was in the box. And I called Krista. I'm like, we got some weird deer head thing. Like, did this come to us wrong? She's like, no, I'm going to hang that on the wall. And I hope it's clear by this point the reason for my lack of trust in Kristen when it comes to aesthetics. I mean, what is that? How many of you think that's nice? Oh, come on, you're just doing that. How many of you think that's just ugly? Told ya. Boo, yeah. Like, that's just, what is that? And it's not like it's been a single instance either. Like, a room is becoming crowded with moose deer head thing fixtures. Oh, whatever, it's just backpacks, but mooses, like. And what's galling to me is that she makes these decisions unilaterally and via my Amazon account. And here's the thing, if we're going to live in the Orwellian nightmare that we call today, where companies are taking our data, the least they can do for me is recommend good books. But now that she's ordered the deer head thingy, my recommendations are getting really confusing and messed up. It's like I log on and there's like, what about a beaver head? Maybe like, so it's like Amazon is very confused. They're like, he seems to like nonfiction, theology, and deer heads. They're confused, and they should be. And to add insult to injury, I have been vying for years now to buy a $3,000 piece of art from the blind, brilliant artist John Bramblett, and that idea was shot down, like, immediately. Like, there's been no conversation, just shot down. And yet, she feels the freedom to buy this. Now, I get it. It is $2,980 cheaper than my idea, but no consultation. And I struggle with these trust issues. Trust. And you know, I think it's always our issue when it comes to God and faith. Ultimately, it's trust. When you boil down our doubts, it's about trust. When we encounter the God of Scripture, a lot of times it's about trust. We're not sure we can trust that God. And when we think about the demands of the Christian faith, its ethics, its virtues, its way of seeing and interacting with the world, we're just not sure we can trust it. And you know, this is so fundamental so far to the story of Moses and God. God is essentially saying to Moses, trust me. I know what's best for you. I know you better than you know yourself, Moses. And the calling I'm giving to you is what is best for you. And Moses' response is, well, a lack of trust. And it's important, I think, because what the fundamental nature of the story is trying to communicate to us is this: this I am God knows what's best for Moses. And this God knows what is best for us, but that's hard to trust. Because this God seems to be calling us to this life of self-sacrificial love, to generosity and forgiving our enemies and showing mercy and being meek with those we disagree with. This God calls us into community with a life of people we don't necessarily agree with or sometimes even like. And it's hard to trust that because we'd rather things like tribalism and revenge, that feeling of being right or superior to others. But this God is always calling us beyond ourselves. I think to a freedom that's bigger than any of us can imagine for ourselves. God's perpetually calling us to be better than we currently are. And it sort of makes sense when you think about it. I've been thinking about the nature of love lately. And if God is love, then one of the things we know about love is this: love always carries demands. We might think, whoa, wait. If love carries demands or expectations, how can that love be unconditional? But I think truly foundational to a proper understanding of love is recognizing love always carries demands. And love without demands is not love. For instance, one of my favorite definitions of love comes from M. Scott Peck. He says this: I define love thus, the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. Love always has the demand of growth, right? If it doesn't, it's not love. It's a cheap knockoff, like affection. God's love, I think you could say, is unconditional only in the sense that it is persistent despite everything that happens. No matter how often we fail to live up to those demands, God will continue to love and call us to be our better selves. But love always places expectations and demands on us. And you know, we learned this in most of our meaningful relationships. Like, it's one thing to say in community, I love community, I love this community, but of course there's demands with that. I demand, right, that I be treated fairly, that I be treated with dignity and respect. Or you might say to a friend, I love you, but I demand you don't stab me in the back, or you don't expose my weaknesses for your own gain, you don't turn on me. Or marriage, right? I love you, but I expect certain things from you. Don't cheat on me. Don't embarrass me. Be there for me when I'm sick, when I'm in need, in distress. Share life with me. Be vulnerable. And you know, I think this is the crux of Moses and God's wrestling match here. God's challenging Moses. I know you, Moses. I love you. This is a step that you need to take. You need to do this to grow, and I'm not going to stop asking it of you. And it's like, you can keep making excuses, you can keep shirking responsibility, but I'm not going to stop asking. And I think it's the same with us. God is relentless that way. No matter how much we run or doubt or distance ourselves from God, God will still love. But it's in that love that God is constantly calling us to take that next step towards virtue, towards living into our divine calling. And I think this is important to understand what happens next, because the scene ends with Moses giving in. Okay, I'll go reluctantly to Egypt. And I think we got to remember that for Moses, this is like a big deal. He has to uproot everything. He's achieved this stable life over 40 years. So this is massively inconvenient. He's leaving Midian, and he's committing to living homeless essentially for the rest of his life. And along the way, it's going to be hellish. And so you can understand Moses' hesitation, but Moses agrees, at least reluctantly, and he heads out to Egypt. And then this happens. At a lodging place on the way, the Lord met Moses and was about to kill him. Odd. But Zipporah took a flint knife, cut off her son's foreskin, and touched Moses' feet with it. "Surely you're a bridegroom of blood to me," she said. So the Lord let him alone. At that time, she said bridegroom of blood, referring to circumcision. Now, it's not lost on me that I just talked about trusting God and then followed it up by reading a passage where it seems like God is about the least trustworthy person imaginable. Because you go to us here, God saying sort of like, trust me. Now, I might kill you, but trust me on this. Like, it's so odd, this random detail in the story, a very Dr. Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing. It's random. It's disturbing. It's also, perhaps because I think I have a bit of an odd sense of humor, I find it downright hysterical, actually. It's kind of funny. Like, it's just so casually mentioned. Hey, Moses, let's go. Okay, I might kill you. What? Chop off some skin, good to go. It's like, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. And the weird thing is quite literally, if you read the story leading up to this passage, the verse before, Moses and God are just chatting like apple pie. Everything's peachy. And then God might kill Moses. Circumcision, oh well, moving on, no big deal. Where's that even come from? My goodness. You know, I think years ago, if somebody had asked me about this text, I think I would have sort of giggled nervously and shrugged my shoulders and just moving on. But there's something here that's important, I think, for us. And I think we have to remember that whenever we read about God in the Bible, we're reading the language of metaphor, allegory, anthropomorphism. The authors are putting language to experiences of the divine. And I think our best shot to understand what's going on here is to try to get at the text imaginatively. Because here's the thing, I have no idea what the author of this story was thinking when they put this together. But I do know what they said, and I think we can try to discern for ourselves what experience of truth were they trying to sort of define here? What divine truth are they trying to put words and stories around? Because I've come to think this a lot of times with Scripture, to ask, why did God do this or why did God do that? I think that's fundamentally the wrong set of questions. I think there's a better set of questions to ask, and they're this. Why would a writer think that God did this? What is the meaning of this event within the context of the story? What is the story within the larger Exodus story trying to convey? And stories like these, they contain these sort of, they're shorthands for massive truths. So I want to unpack circumcision, because that seems key to the story. Whatever it is that saved Moses' life, it was about leaving some skin behind. So, what is it? Weird. Thoughts coming ahead. I'm not going to tell any personal stories about circumcision for you. There you go. Awkward, okay. The most obvious thing we can say about circumcision is this. It's about covenant. Committing to something larger than yourself. And you know, the ancients saw circumcision as this ritual that sort of signified rebirth after birth. So it's about being born again. You enter the world as a human, but with circumcision, you enter the world into a specific tribe of people. Circumcision was how you marked yourself as part of Yahweh's tribe. Now, it's worth noting to me, I think this is really good news, that in terms of the Christian path, this ritual was replaced with baptism. And that's no small thing, right? Because A, it means you don't have to cut off a part of your penis, but B, it's inclusive. Both genders can participate in that. So how about that? But what was circumcision about? Tribal identity. What it signified is, I take a commitment seriously. It's an identity issue. It's about seeing yourself as part of a bigger story, marking yourself as something larger than yourself. It's the same, I don't have my wedding ring on today. I forgot it, huh? But it's the same sort of, that didn't work out well. It's the same idea, the reason we go through rituals, put on a wedding ring, or why you might buy a team jersey. I want to be part of the tribe. It's why we go through citizenship, right? It means something to become a Canadian or American or whatever it is. And here's where it becomes significant. The fact that Moses has not bothered to circumcise his son can be read as a sign he hasn't fully aligned himself with the Hebrew people, the very ones he's called to deliver. And so I think what the story is saying is this: Moses, you failed to truly commit here. You're kind of willing to go, but you've got one foot in, one foot out. And I think what the story is communicating is this: failing to commit to something is a kind of suicide. If you take something on and fail to commit to it, fail to go all in, fail to fully invest yourself in that, it's doomed. It's prepared to die. It's to enact the path of death. And you know, it's interesting. In a room like this, we need to make normalized failure on the best of days. We need to make space for the fact that we can go all in and fail. We can give ourselves completely to something and have it really flop. That needs to be normalized. But I think this, if you want to guarantee failure, try doing something half-ass. Because you might get away with it for a time, but it's going to catch up with you eventually. And there comes a point, a certain time, where the question is this: okay, well, are you in? Are you ready to leave some skin behind? Because if you're not, you're done before you even start. I have a friend, and he's starting a church of his own, and it was very exciting getting this started. And he decided to make a few decisions. Well, I'm going to kind of start it as like a book club, and it's going to kind of operate that way. And over the past 6 months, he's sort of become incredibly frustrated that this thing is not sort of getting any sort of momentum behind it. And, you know, as we chatted together, there's a part of me that wanted to say to him, well, it's because you're not all in. Like, if you're going to do something, like, do it. Go all in. Don't just start a book club. Start a church. And, you know, I think on a symbolic level, you know, we see this picture of God sort of trying to kill Moses, but I think the real issue is not God's desire to kill Moses. What the story is saying is, Moses, you're embarking on a suicide mission if you fail to take the actions that are necessary for you. And you got mixed allegiances here. I'm calling you to deliver the Hebrew people. So are you one of them or not? Are you Egyptian or Hebrew? Are you in? Enough of your identity crisis, Moses. If you're doing this, it needs to be decided. Are you in? And you know, there's a time to wrestle. There's a time to ask questions, to resist, to ponder. But there's also a time to say, yep, I'm in. I'm going to give my allegiance to this thing. I'm going to give 100%. I'm in. And to show that, I'm going to leave some skin behind. And I think it's the same with us, no matter what sort of areas we look at. Let's consider this community, Nexus. I would say this for us here: there's a time to wrestle, there's a time to ask questions, to resist, to ponder, but there's also a time to say about a church and a community, yep, I'm in. I'm going to give my allegiance to this thing. I'm going to give it 100%. And if it fails, fine. But it's not going to fail on account of me not being in. You know, people often talk to me, what does it mean to be in here at Nexus? What sort of hoops do we have to jump through? What do I have to believe certain things? What do I have to believe? Or I don't know how much my heart's in this. I keep coming back to Daniel Berrigan's quote about faith. I think it's the best quote on faith there is. Is this: faith is not where your head is at. Faith is not where your heart is at. Faith is where your ass is at. And I think that's true in all of life. Are you here? Are you with us? Well, I don't know what I believe. It doesn't matter where your head's at. I don't know how passionate I am. It doesn't matter where your heart's at. Are you here? The same thing goes with relationships, right? There's a time to wrestle, ask questions, resist, ponder. But there's also a time to say in our relational lives, I'm in. I'm in. I'm going to give my allegiance to this thing. I'm going to give 100%. If it fails, so be it. But it's not going to be on account of me not giving my all. The same thing with our sort of personal divine calling. What is God calling you to? What is that? I know that sounds mystical in a sort of sense, but what is it that people have been saying to you? What is it that you want to do, that you're passionate about, that you're talented at? What is it that God is calling you to? Your community is insisting that that's your thing. Whatever that is, there's a time to ask questions, to ponder, resist, but there's a time to say, I'm in 100%. Because what I believe the story is saying is this: you go half in on anything and it's already dead. Circumcision, secondly, was not just a sign of covenant allegiance. It was a demonstration of being willing to make the right sacrifices. We talked about this a few weeks ago. Moses starts small. The first act for him is just taking off his shoes, his sandals. One small act after another sets him up to be able to make the big sacrifice when necessary. I think that's what's going on here. It's a progression. Moses, you're now at a crossroads. You're heading to Egypt, Moses. And now that we're moving, Moses, the sacrifices are going to get bigger. Now is the time to give something up. Now is the time to leave some skin behind. Because here's the thing. I've been thinking about this. When we want to make the right decisions, chances are it's going to require giving something up. And that's going to be difficult and painful. I was away on my yearly retreat at Spa Scandinav this week. Doing some thinking. And I was with my pastor group that I go with, and we're talking over the evening about the Me Too movement and how prevalent this is right now. And we're sort of talking about what should our response be to that as pastors. Well, how do we sort of address those things? And it's not like we're a council where we need to make some sort of statement, but it's like how do we think about that? How do we talk to our people about that? And it was interesting, as we sort of talked about it, we kept going back to, well, just keep going back to Jesus. Because Jesus has some really strong things to say about sacrificing and losing some skin when it comes to issues of sexuality. This is what Jesus says in Matthew 5. You've heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you, anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. It's always interesting when Jesus starts talking about hell. It's intense. And what is Jesus saying here? I think he's saying this: it's better to deal with small losses than to lose everything. And when it comes to the issues that we're facing culturally, I think the idea here is it's time perhaps to leave some skin behind. And so think about your eyes. If you can't look at someone without objectifying them, gouge out your eyes. If your hands are in any way tempted to grope someone or strike someone, cut off your hand. With your tongue, if you're tempted to catcall, talk down to, talk over someone, cut out your tongue. It's interesting with the Brett Kavanaugh thing, we've been asked to sort of, through this issue, think about drinking. And you know, in a church like Nexus, we like our booze, but we're being asked to consider drinking, to assess that. And I would say this: if when you drink, you become a predator, if when you drink, the only thing you can think about is getting sex, or venting some kind of rage, or using that inebriated state to exercise power over someone, stop drinking. If you have a position of power and you're tempted to use it as leverage for sex or any form of personal gain, give up that position of power. This is what Jesus is saying. Get rid of it. You got to leave some skin behind. Leave it behind before you unleash hell. The hell of hurting someone, the hell of shame, fear, and denial that will eventually put you in. Like, if you want to walk the path, you got to leave some skin behind, and that's going to be painful. It's the same thing in all of life with expectations and relationships. I had a friend, we were planning this event for months, and this friend bailed on me at the last minute, texted me the morning of and said, I can't make it. I was so annoyed, right? So annoyed, even though I know I've done that many times myself, but I was annoyed in the moment. You know, I was thinking one of the things we need to sacrifice though more often in relationships is expectations. Expectations we put on other people. I don't know what's going on in his life. From my vantage point, I feel stood up, but I don't know what's going on there. Maybe I need to leave behind certain expectations. Or your personal calling. What are you willing to give up to pursue your personal calling? Nexus, what is it that you have to leave behind? Maybe for some of us, it's the idea of personal autonomy and that Sunday mornings are yours to do with whatever you want. That's a sacrifice. You've already made it. You're here, so I'm preaching to the choir. But maybe it means I'm going to have to start giving financially to this. Or I'm going to have to sacrifice some of my time and energy. What's the sacrifices that we need to make? You know, the final thing that this story drives home for me, I think it's very interesting. I've been thinking about how this speaks to how I think myself about church, about love, about family, about faith, but also about my own apathy and my own cynicism. And what the story reminds me of is this, on an abstract level, you know, circumcision here for Moses was about haste and timing when it comes to doing the right thing. Because I would say this, some things in life take time to come to fruition, but other things need to happen right now. And Zipporah knows this. She must act quickly because death is right at the door. And I love how, again, the feminine here nurtures virtue, rescues virtue. And it's telling, what Zipporah gets is this, some things have to happen now. And the same with Moses, it's the same with all of us. It requires some discernment, but some things in life, they can be put off. And other things are going to take time to come to fruition, but some things are urgent, and they need urgent attention. Because sometimes timing really is everything. Discernment is everything. And so for Moses, for virtue, the story is this. Moses, are you in? Like, really in? Because here's the thing, Moses. The thing I'm calling you to, the whole delivering the Hebrew people, that's not a half-in, half-out kind of thing. That's an all-in kind of thing. And so, Moses, are you prepared to make the appropriate sacrifices to see that through? Are you prepared to give up and leave behind some things to make the right choices? And if so, then it's time to leave some skin behind. Oh, and one more thing, Moses. It needs to happen right now. Not tomorrow. Now. So get out that knife and leave some skin behind. And I think it's the same with us. If we're coming at something we feel called to, and we haven't left our foreskins behind, that project, that calling, that thing, it's already dead in the water. And so this morning, what is it? What is it? What is it that's keeping you from growing into virtue, from living out human reality to its fullest, aligning yourself with what is eternal? What is it that's keeping you from maturing into being fully and truly alive? I'm going to ask the band to come because we're going to do something a bit different. But I want to ask the question, what are you holding on to? What is it that you need to agree to give up to take on your current task with your full self, to move forward in the next step of your own journey? What do you need to circumcise? And because haste sometimes is everything, let's do it right now. Let's collectively this morning take one more step towards being what we're called to. So I'm going to ask Wes to come. He's going to read a little something. This idea came from our Creators Guild at Nexus. Yes, we have one of those. And this was Wes's idea. And I love the way he has phrased this exercise, because some of us, thank you, Wes, are embracing the pirate theme of the year. So the question is this: what would you like and choose to give up as we start this pirate journey together? What are we as the Good Ship Nexus crew giving up to join in? Do you want to just quickly for us, Wes, here, explain a little bit more about this idea? We're going to hand out some cards in just a moment, but if you want to maybe explain a little bit about that. Awesome. Thank you. And so I'm going to ask Eliza if she would, and Allison there, if they would start handing out the cards. Because perhaps for us, it's one thing to say, okay, I'll think about that. But there's something powerful about the haste of perhaps writing something down. What would you like and choose to give up as we start this journey together? I'm just going to give you a couple of minutes, and then I've just got a few little closing remarks and a song for us. We're going to take these cards. We're going to burn them as a symbolic gesture, so you can leave them behind wherever you want. And who knows, they might be resurrected later this season. But I would say this: our apathy and penchant for indecision needs to be pirated. Our resistance to community, our resistance to virtue, to duty, to responsibility, our resistance to ever going all in on something needs to be pirated. And this is what was so telling to me about the life of piracy. It demanded the sacrifice up front. You couldn't go pirate halfway. It was a massive leap of faith. You left the land behind and stepped on a boat. For a pirate, there was no one foot in, one foot out. It was all in. I believe that's what this story is calling us to, what the Christian path is calling us to. There's a time to wrestle, to ask questions, to resist, to ponder. But there's also a time to say, yep, I'm in. And if I'm in, I'm going to give my allegiance to this thing. I'm going to give 100%. If it fails, so be it. But it's not going to be because I didn't give everything. And so where is it for you? Whatever it is, where are you being called to go all in? What step can you take towards that? Where do you need to take the knife and leave some skin behind? Because friends, it's time to leave something behind. What is it for you this morning?